Hey, everybody. Welcome to the next episode of the Strand Tennis Center podcast, filled with tips, advice, tennis, not tennis, just life advice, too, whatever you need. Like it on YouTube. Share it on the podcast as well. Thank you.
Welcome to the Strand Tennis Center podcast, everybody. It's so great to have Jackie Lopez back. Number one player for Rutgers. Jackie, I was just discussing this before we were having technical difficulties. We were writing your name in the last podcast we did, and my wife was like, my daughter's name is Jackie, and she's like, you guys are totally getting this wrong. You're not spelling it right. J-A-C-K-I-E, right?
J-A-C-K. Yeah.
Q-U-E is Jacqueline. You could spell it that way, too. But I thought that was an interesting thing that we were actually correct with our spelling. Usually we mess everything up, right, Santi? Yes, we do. So, first thing, Hillary was supposed to come in last week because I want to ask you about this. And she had a girl come in to recruit. She wasn't supposed to come, and she did come, a girl from New Jersey. Did you meet her, too?
Yes, I met her.
How did it go?
It went good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
She's what's the girl's name again?
I don't remember her name, okay. But I,
she's supposed to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she works hard.
Oh, she does. Apparently. And yeah. Did you find that when you see a new recruit, how many of those does Hillary want you to meet? Do you usually meet all the visits?
Yeah, we usually meet all the visits. Yeah. I've been hosting probably 2 times already.
Okay.
And then the last recruit that came in, she saw my apartment and okay. stuff.
So they stay the night or they just stay for...
So usually most recruits stay the night.
Yeah.
This last recruit just, she just went in and
so
still...
So your apartment, did you clean it?
My apartment's always clean. Always clean. And Hillary knows that too.
Oh, that's why she goes, this is the way life is going to be. It's going to be perfect here. Everything's going to be clean, neat, organized. So
yeah.
Season's just early. You have a long season. You guys are 4-2 right now. I think, what are you, 2-3 singles-wise for yourself?
3-3.
3-3.
Yes.
Initial thoughts right off the bat for this season, right now? Early start.
Yeah, I think we're doing really good so far. I think our team is very close, so that helps a lot. And it helps that we're all eager, motivated to work hard. And we're always there before practice, like serving. I'm doing spinning before practice, so it's a good environment to have.
You take spinning class, you said?
Yes.
At the Rutgers gym?
No, so we have a spin bike at the courts, I just do some a spin workout before practice.
Times have changed. Santi, I told you, we didn't even have a foam roller in college. We had nothing. Now they have spin bikes. It's awesome. So we were talking to Taylor Fogelman, LSU coach, and we were also talking to a girl that goes to SMU, Caroline McGimley, who's from New Jersey, and asking the process, in regards to the schedule, are there a lot of one-on-ones available for you guys as well? Does Hillary run it that way? Taylor does it that way. At LSU, he'll give individual lessons, like privates in the beginning or in the morning, and then you'll have a group team practice. Is that how it's run, or how do you guys do it?
Yeah, so if we want an individual, we just have to ask Hillary or Haley a week in advance. So she'll give us an individual before practice, usually 30 minutes before practice. But for me, I personally just texted her to have an individual every Tuesday before practice, and that's how it's been going.
So you just have it on the schedule. You get an individual every Tuesday.
Correct.
Okay. Now, did you always do that, or did you find yourself going, I don't need it this week, or I do need it that week, or do you find yourself, listen, I just want an individual every week. Have you always done that being at Rutgers?
Yes, I've always done that.
Okay. I know. You're a little crazy. You talk about your double sessions in the summer like you were saying, but go ahead.
No, last semester too, like, I would have an individual every Tuesday, but in the afternoons, since I didn't have class in the afternoon, so I would be like, okay, let me get an individual in the afternoon after practice.
I have to ask this question now. Do the coaches have to tell you to slow down sometimes and say, listen, take a day off? Because you seem to be very, very focused, which is great.
Yeah.
Or maybe they don't want you to burn out. You work so hard.
I mean, sometimes Hillary will say, okay, make sure you're like resting and make sure you're like, you know, still resting and stuff. But yeah.
So how do you deal with travel and play? Because I remember we were always doing homework on the road and things like that. How's the travel schedule, and how do you deal with compartmentalizing work and study and all that stuff?
I mean, travel schedule is really busy for sure for everyone, especially with exams and stuff. But yeah, we usually all do homework in the van, or if we have an evening match, then we'll do like homework in the morning. We try not to burn out a lot with it. And Hillary always tells us, make sure you're not burning out and only doing an hour. So, but yeah, it's tough, but it's always just finding that timing to do it.
So you were telling me before the interview, you were doing double sessions in the summer to get ready. How many hours a day were you playing in the summer?
I mean, I was training an hour and a half in the morning, usually like 8 to 9:30. And then I would have fitness 10 to 11. Okay. And then I would have practice again 2 to 3:30. So it would be like 3 hours of tennis and an hour of fitness with coaching in between that.
And you said you were working too.
Correct.
I love when people go, I cannot do this or I have to sacrifice that. I said, why is it or? Just and. You can do them both.
You can do anything.
It's amazing how much time you really have and how much time we waste. And you can still sleep 7 or 8 hours. I mean, personally, I try to keep busy. I get to sleep at 11. I get up at 7, and that's plenty. And then you can – the problem is people don't do anything when they're awake. Mm-hmm. It's not the question of not sleeping. Like, oh, I should work, you know, 18, 19 hours a day. I only have to sleep 6. But you don't need to do that. You just need to be productive during
the
day.
Right. And I personally always like to keep myself busy too, so –
yeah, I find myself losing my mind if I'm not busy. I don't know. I just have to keep it or I'll drive people nuts. I'll drive something nuts. I'll drive everybody nuts. I have to keep busy. Your brain has got to keep active and motivated. But I wrote down some actual questions, like some real ones for you.
Okay.
Let's see if
ready for it.
It's like an interview question. All right. Can you share a transformative experience or breakthrough moment in your athletic career that significantly impacted your trajectory, like a large moment that changed where you were headed, where you were going? Anything you can think of?
A breakthrough, like college-wise or juniors?
Anything. It could be two. It could be like, I remember when I was in eighth grade, this happened, and then in college. Is there any large moment as you go through life? Usually it happens. Usually there's some defining moments when you're in high school, and there's defining moments when you're in middle school. But yeah, if you can think of one or two.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, juniors, Southerns was a really big tournament, right? So Southerns was good. I placed in third, so that was really good for me, and I also got the sportsmanship award.
How old were you when that happened?
I was probably 14, I believe.
Okay, it was transformative because you did really well, and you said, maybe I can be good at this. Is that what happened? You know?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like from that moment, I felt like good about myself, confident about what I could do and my capabilities as well. And then also in Super Nationals, I played pretty good, and I think that helped me as well. And then in college, last semester, I actually played All-Americans pre-quali. So that gave me confidence too, I believe, because I qualified for it. And I was like, okay, you know what? I can do this. So that was a fun tournament to be in.
Confidence is tough. Go ahead. You were going to say something else?
No.
Okay. Confidence is very dicey in tennis. Like we said, I mean, you could win 5 matches in a row, feel like you can never lose, and then you lose a match, you feel like you can never win. It's really on a fine line. I remember when Djokovic was in slams and wasn't winning slams for a while, and he thought, I could never win one of these matches again. Now you think like he can never lose, and recently just lost. But
yeah,
it's so... Like, before that moment in Southerns, were you really unsure when you were 14? Or did you even have that kind of idea of saying, how hard were you on yourself before that? Did you think, like, I don't know how good I can be? Or were you really, really, how many times did you say, I'm going to quit, do you remember? When you were 14, 15, even before that?
Yeah.
Usually we quit every other day, but.
I mean, yes, thoughts like that came through my mind, especially when, like, I would play a bad match or have a bad tournament and be like, ugh, you suck. Why are you even playing the sport? But that was around, like, when I was, like, probably, like, I don't know, 15. But I never really thought of quitting the sport because I love it a lot. It was more so confidence-wise. Like, my confidence would go down, like, downhill. Just because I want to do great in every tournament and match. So But yeah, that's what happened to me.
How do you prioritize recovery, self-care, mindset with training?
Recovery. So I like to go. I do ice baths. Like usually every Thursday after lift. I do ice bath and then I do the hot tub. And that helps me a lot when I have like a match on Friday or I play Saturday. That helps me. And then usually we have massages like every other Sunday. A 30-minute massage, which helps a lot too. And then I like to go see the trainer as well after lift or after practice when I have like – it doesn't even have to be an injury. It's just like, oh, I feel my back tight. Can you please check this or my calf? And the trainer's super nice, and she's always there for us.
The ice bath has become – I remember in college we would do the ice bath. It's become huge in vogue, right, because I'll do one every morning too. But it used to be for athletes, after you play tennis, you go into the ice bath for inflammation and all that. Now people do it every morning, and they do it for dopamine and all those things. And it's a super thing that has got so many more positive effects than just the anti-inflammatory nature of it. I mean, I've told Santi I've gotten addicted to it. I used to do it in college. Now I do it psychotically every morning sometimes. Because I have one outside, and then you just crack the ice like an insane person.
Yeah.
You go in there and... That's just for people that are a little crazy, right, Santi? A little insane. But I would even tell you to do it more than once. Like,
yeah.
do it more than once a week. Say probably do it two or three times. It's also going to help you with not just inflammation after you work out, just with any kind of nagging injuries. A lot of those sorenesses go away
right.
if you just constantly do it and it's in
yeah.
your system. But how cold is the water usually, do you know?
Very cold, freezing.
I remember never doing ice baths years ago, and somebody was going into an ice bath. They're like, it's 58 degrees. It's so cold. I'm like, oh, my God, it's freezing. Now you acclimatize to it, and you're like, oh, it's only 45. Boy, this is not good enough.
Yeah,
you become psycho about it.
It's so cold. Like, I just put my legs in. Like, sometimes I put my shoulders in my back, but sometimes just my legs. And sometimes I see the wrestlers out there, and they put, like, their whole like face in yeah. like all the way in. I'm like, I don't know how they do that.
There was an interview, Dr. Andrew Huberman, who's on his podcast, guys, incredible. He said some of the toughest guys, like even the SEALs and all these, you know, all these special forces, you get them into an ice bath and they freak. They don't like the ice bath. I mean,
yeah.
It is it's a little, how long do you go in for, do you know? You can
Usually 10 minutes.
That's
which
good.
Is,
I mean,
I know.
10 minutes.
I know.
That's tough.
It's tough, yeah.
I mean,
like,
I go in for 2 to 4 minutes, and that's enough.
Yeah.
And there's a weird sort of thing. Like, people just stand still in the ice bath, right?
Mm-hmm.
But actually, it's colder if you move your arms and your leg because it creates
yeah.
a convection, right?
Yeah.
So people stand still, and actually that creates like a membrane. It keeps you warm. If you keep moving in the ice bath, you'll be even more frozen.
Yeah, no. I mean, yeah.
These are just... podcast and how to be psychotic and be crazy and do things that you don't feel. And then what was the other thing? Like when you do things that make you uncomfortable. So if you have to do something that make you uncomfortable, it actually helps your brain and helps you with longevity. So you do things that you actually do not want to do,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it actually will improve your brain function, Santi. Santi. All right, let's go through a few other questions because I'm curious. I wanted to write these down. Skill acquisition. Learning strategies and techniques, what is effective for you? Where have you, has it just been personal coaches, or do you go outside that? You told me you've listened to YouTube and a lot of things. Where do you get a lot of your information? Obviously, you have a head coach, but personally, do you search out other information as well?
Yeah, so actually, in the fall, I started working with a psychologist
nice.
At Rutgers.
Awesome.
His name is Alex. He's been really, really great. And I meet with him like once a week, 30 minutes. And something I've been doing recently, which has helped me a lot, is meditation. I meditate at night. I asked him, like, does it have to be a specific day or time? And he was like, no, you can meditate anytime. As long as you're meditating 5 to 10 minutes, that's perfect. And I've been doing that. I feel more calm, more relaxed. And then he also gave me a book to read, which is called The Inner Game of Tennis.
I don't know if
you heard of it.
Great book. Oh, yeah.
It's a great book. I'm on chapter 7 right now. There's 10 chapters, and I love it so far. So
did
he's been great.
Did you get to the point where he was like, you know, I didn't have to talk too much, but you get to the point where he was like, give someone a compliment, you know, give the opponent a compliment, or they'll go right to their head and they'll think about it. Did you read that part?
Yeah. I mean, I've been reading about the self one and the self two concept. Yeah. So,
fantastic. Then he wrote all these other things. Inner Game of Golf. He got into all those things.
Yeah, it's
fantastic.
A great book.
So, meditation wise, do you have a process? Do you use one of the apps like Calm or one of those? Or how do you do it? Or did he give you a process of meditating? Do you say anything? You do any breathing techniques? What's your meditation look like?
So I don't use a specific app. I just look up YouTube videos. And I usually, like, if I want to do meditation for anxiety or for calmness or sleeping, so literally anything I want. And I even do it with him sometimes when I meet with him in person. And we work on breathing as well. So I think it's great when it comes to playing a match.
Did you find yourself going, okay, maybe, I don't know how this started. Would you find yourself nervous in matches or just natural life tendencies of being stressed and saying, listen, I need something to handle that? What made you reach out and find somebody?
Yeah, it was more so, like you said, feeling nervous in the matches. Because life skill wise, I feel like I'm fine.
Yeah.
But it was more so the matches, because I get really tight with myself. Like, I put so much pressure, and I was like, okay, I need to find a way to not put so much pressure on myself. And I reached out to him and it worked out.
Yeah. The breathing techniques are huge. You do, I don't know what he's told you. You do a box breathing technique. You do a 4-in, 4-out hold. You do a 478 breathing technique. There's so many great
belly breathing too
to help you relax. There's so many things that are not drug related that can help you. Between eating, exercise, and breathing, it can really help you out a lot. And that's awesome that you're reaching into that. There's so many great. There's a great book called Radical Acceptance. There's a great book by Henry Schulman called One Blade of Grass, which is fantastic. He's a yogi. It's unbelievable to read these things and realize what you can do mentally and how you can control a lot of those emotions. Let me see. What was the other one I was looking to ask?
And he also sent me a video of
Djokovic
talking about mindfulness and breathing and stuff.
You want to? It's insane. I mean, those guys, you're just... They call it cloning. You want to be somebody, just clone that person as much as you can. You just try to take on, you know, as many of the habits that they do. There's no mysteries to some of these successes.
Mm-hmm.
They always say the game plan's hard, but the game plan's easy, but the discipline's hard.
All right.
So, you know, being successful at something just takes discipline. Tennis is harder because it's technical and there's a lot of things, but... Say, like, losing weight or just saving money, you just need discipline, things
correct.
Like that.
Yeah.
Aspiring to excel in your athletic pursuits, what piece of advice or lesson did you learn along your journey? Have any advice for anybody?
Advice?
Success-wise.
Yeah. I think being very disciplined, being consistent, having routines, daily routines, and sticking to those routines. But I think for me, it's been always hard work. I've seen results with hard work, dedication as well, and making sure you love what you do. I think that's very important as well. I love tennis, so I feel like for me, it's not a hard sport. Like, it is hard, but like, I love it a lot and I've worked hard for it.
So did it just happen? Like, did you say to yourself, listen, I know you said you want to go to college. I want to be a number one player? Or did it just happen? Did you go to Rutgers and just all of a sudden beat everybody and become number one? Was that your goal? Or did it just kind of like, was it that specific for you?
Not specific. Like, I did want to play high in the lineup for sure. And I feel like being at Rutgers, I could play high in the lineup and play against these good players in the Big Ten. And in these matches, play against really good players. So for me, it's it's having that confidence to play in the top.
We were talking about the new facility. They got a beautiful new facility on Livingston campus, outdoor facility. Now the gym, I used to go to the gym at the rack. We used to train. There was a little gym under the rack. You probably know it well. Mm-hmm. I used to work out with the football players and the baseball players before the football program. This is forever ago. This is 30 years ago. Do you guys, ladies, still work out in the same gym there? Where's your training facility now?
So we train in the APC.
Okay.
Which is on Livy as well.
Oh, it's on Livingston campus. Okay.
Yeah, it's next to Jersey Mike's Arena.
Okay. Do you is that your own facility now, or is that where all the athletes work out, or is it?
So common? We share that facility with gymnastics and wrestling.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's where they train and that's where they lift as well.
Okay. Now, is your druther? Would you like the facility where the outdoor courts are to have the training facility right there? Would it be more convenient, or is it not that far off? Not that big a deal.
I don't think it's that big of a deal because it's walking distance.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I think it's APC is great.
Do you guys? We used to run around the whole campus, jog like that was Bush campus. We used to run around the whole stadium, up Bush, all the way around. Does Hillary make you guys jog around like the rack around?
Not really. I mean, we only did it twice in the fall, so she didn't make us really run a lot.
Nice.
But she knows I love to run, and my teammates know I like to run, so I'll just go on runs.
They used to kill us. We used to have to do the mile thing and run. Because it could tell it, because if you go down Bush.
Yeah. I know what pathway you're talking.
You're at the bottom there, and you got to go up. It is what it is.
Yeah.
They didn't have cameras back then. No one knew if you were getting abused at all. Now everybody's got a phone. Everybody can be troubled. So, season coming up, you're at Ithaca, right, this weekend?
Yes.
So, Big Ten, in-conference starts about a couple weeks after that, right?
Yes, March 14th, I believe.
So what was Hillary's goal? Did she set a specific goal and say, listen, this is how many wins we want in the Big Ten this year. This is where we're looking to do. Or is she just like, work as hard as you can, do the best you can. And besides what she says, what's your goal for the Big Ten? What do you want out of it?
Yeah, I mean, she always makes us have, like, we have a team meeting at the end of the fall semester. And we have team goals, and one of the goals is winning the doubles point, because that's very important. So winning the doubles point in the Big Ten matches, also having a winning record this semester, like more of a winning record, and what else?
And do you want to win two rounds in the tournament this year because of the Big Ten? Because you beat Michigan State the first round, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the goal, doing better every year, for sure. So, but yeah, mainly winning that doubles point is very crucial.
Yeah, we talked about this before. The format's kind of exciting. I mean, do you like that format, the short set? I mean, with doubles being a quick?
Yeah, I like it. I think it's good.
I guess it was really your only experience, because freshman year they had it for you too, right? Mm-hmm. It was all the same. Because I remember this changed, oh my God. I don't know how many years ago, but it was a big change for a lot of people because they're so used to playing a full match and a full 2 out of 3. But watching it, it is a little bit more exciting. It's quicker, and it makes you get off to a faster start. You have to really, really get off to a fast start or else it's over.
Mm-hmm.
How's your partner this year?
She's good.
Yeah?
She's good. We haven't actually played a lot together this year. She's been playing more with Naomi. She's a freshman. So, but overall, they're doing really good together.
Speaking of the freshmen, I mean, speaking of the new teammates, have they blended in perfectly? How's that gone with them, getting along with them? How's the culture with that?
Yeah, so Naomi is a freshman. And then we have Yana. She's a grad student from California. And it's good. I think they both bring in different energy. Good energy. Yana's tennis is very, very interesting because she'll like slice the ball, she'll hit drop shots, then she'll just hit the ball so flat and hard. But, yeah, they bring in a good culture for the team.
Well, that can create a lot of off-balance play. It's hard for people to deal with. Different spins and
course.
Speeds, right?
Of course.
It's quite annoying.
Yes.
Yes. So, you being number one, how does the challenge system work? Is it basically Hillary going, okay, if things are going well, I don't make any changes? Or is there kind of a situation where I think there's a fine balance, right? Everybody wants to feel comfortable where they are, but they also need to know that they have to perform. How does it usually go if someone, not even yourself, if someone's playing three and they've lost three or four matches in a row, is there a change or is there a challenge or does Hillary just make a move in the lineup?
So Hillary would make a move. I feel like, personally, for the player to have confidence in their game, especially if they're losing three or four matches, Hillary will make a move, maybe, like, move her down one spot, but just to have that confidence again, and not only for the player but for the team as well, right? So if a player is playing at number two, right, and they've been losing a few matches, then she'll drop her to three. And that's mainly so maybe because it matches more with the game style of the opponent, right? Because one and two, usually they're like flat, hard hitters, and it's quick. Whereas number three, it's like, okay, more of a consistent game, more of a grinding game. So Hillary just tries to find out what game style matches the best with each opponent and how their confidence is and for the team as well.
Where do you find, because there's always kids here that want to play in college and things like that. Where's the biggest delineation? Like you said, one, two, and three. Harder hitters, one and two. Where's the biggest line where you go, okay, the top two players are really different than all the rest, and then five and six is a different level. Like where do you find that line where you're like, okay, here to here?
Probably after three, maybe.
After three, top three.
Top three, I would say. Because
Five, and six, you have the ability, and I'm just thinking about students who are training and playing. So 4, 5, and six, I mean, you still need to be a very good player.
Of course.
But you don't have to be, I guess, like what's your UTR now?
I honestly have not checked.
You see, that's great. See, we talk about
this. I don't know my UTR.
Who cares, right? I mean, the problem is this. Well, we'll go on to the UTR thing.
Yeah.
People in our training facility are so worried about their UTR
that
they're so afraid to play somebody that's got a half a point lower UTR because it's going to affect them. When really, we've discussed this 1,000 times, the UTR should be blind. You should only know your own UTR.
Mm-hmm.
And just increasing it. And who cares about anybody else's UTR? Because that... We used to just play everybody as kids. You just played anybody. They were there, you played them. You didn't even know their USTA star ranking or whatever. It was so hard to get rankings as a kid. So usually on average, I guess, because you don't know your UTR, we'll guess. I wouldn't say, we didn't even look it up.
Yeah. Sorry.
I guess one, two, and three would probably be 10s and above or somewhere around there, right? And then the threes below between 8 and 10s, right?
Yeah.
So I guess it's a good, you hate to use UTR, I guess it's a good goal for a kid to say, okay, if I want to play Division I, I can be a 7 or an 8 on a lot of Division I teams and play 6, 4, or 5. Because a lot of kids put themselves, you know, and you don't want to mislead kids and tell them, all right, everybody can play college, it's very hard, we talk about it's a 1 in 1,000. The only good thing about a UTR is if you can go, all right, if I can get my number to a 7 and 8, some people are going to look at me because it is the standard right now to look at. Which was great. When you were a kid, when you were doing this, Southerns and all that, were you more obsessed with the UTR? And that was a big deal with school, right? Like, what was your UTR before you were recruited? Like, as a senior in high school, do you know what it was?
I think it was a 9.5.
Okay.
When I was being recruited. But yeah, definitely in juniors, I would look more at my UTR for sure. So I get that, you know, juniors look at their UTRs to get into colleges and scholarships and stuff like that. Or if I have this UTR, I'm going to play in this lineup,
right?
So it is stressful. But I feel like once I got into college, especially this year, my junior year, I haven't really looked at my UTR.
Yeah.
I did check my UTR last year, sophomore year. But I haven't really checked it a lot. But definitely when I was a junior, I would
look it
up,
Santi. Go to myutr.com. Look up Jackie's UTR. We'll see. Jackie
Lopez.
I
don't know what it
is. Let's see. It'd be funny to see what it is now.
Yeah. But,
oh, what? What's that? Jeez. Oh, is that her? Yeah, that's it. 8.8. Well, this is not even, it says. It's like, it's an 8.9 because she's playing all these great players. That's what happens. Did you look it up
from Georgia.
Fast? She's from Georgia. Yeah, that's it. I don't even know if it's her. Is this the real Jackie Lopez stand up?
So I don't know, to be honest, that's my ETR.
You're getting competition. You're playing number one. It's fine. All that is great. Did you find that when your UTR, if you can remember, were people reaching out to you more when your UTR got over a 9 or something like that? Did you find that distinct difference, or did you not even know people were just reaching out to you anyways, college-wise?
Yeah. I think they were still reaching out to me.
Yeah.
I think it was just – it was UTR and then also, like, my results in USTA tournaments and ITF tournaments. So I feel like, yeah, they look at it, but they also want to see how you're doing in these tournaments, you know?
So that's good advice to kids that want to play. So what would you say? Don't obsess about your UTR and just...
Yeah, I would say don't be so obsessed with it because it just... UTR is so random. Like, it just goes up and down. And, like, if you have a bad day or a bad match against a lower UTR, like, your UTR can drop, but it's just one bad match or one bad day, you know? So I wouldn't rely on that.
And UTR, if we want to be straight, is a business, right? Their job is to make money. It's a private business. So if you don't play a match for 6 months, they're going to drop your UTR because they want you to play.
That's true, too.
Because you're not any good anymore.
Yeah.
It's money. So the more matches you play, the more money they get, and the more results you'll get, and they'll feed you. It's like a dopamine hit, right? So you have to play, or they're just going to lower it. So don't worry. It's not affecting your level. If you can reach out to a coach, if they know your performance, if you are playing well, don't worry about, like, even people play UTRs and they're like, oh, I only won 4-4. My UTR is going to drop.
Yeah.
The coach is not going to care. You won the match.
It's stress for, I mean, I wouldn't say for no reason, but it's just stress that's not going to help you with your tennis because the results also, like, your USTA national ranking also helps too and stuff.
Which is great to hear because you're just focused on your match right now. You're not focused on all these arbitrary stats.
Yeah.
You got a team. I think the team thing is great because we've been having this problem recently. A lot of these good high school players, a lot of other competing clubs are saying, don't play in high school. It's a waste of time because you know, your UTR won't go up, blah, 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 and all this stuff. And all these kids aren't playing high school. And to be quite honest with you, a lot of these kids, this is going to be their only team experience they have. They'll be lucky to play Division III, Division II, and that's just the reality of it. So they're not playing on these teams because all these coaches are like, you got to get your UTR up, you got to get your UTR up, you can't do this, you can't play in high school, blah, blah. And they're really losing and ruining the own experience because I'm sure you're loving playing on team, right?
Yeah, I love it, yeah.
Huh? Wouldn't you, I mean, so you've had both, you played UTAs, you played these. Isn't it more fun to be part of a team?
Yeah, I love being in a team, like, the cheering is so different, you know. You have your teammates there supporting you, so it's very fun.
To be quite honest with you, you're 1% of people, though, in regards to being able to play on a high-level college team. So most of these kids, their only experience is going to be playing on a high school team. It's fun. You're on the bus. You're doing these things. They're all sacrificing this because coaches, which is unfortunate, are pumping them up saying you can do this, this, and this when they really just want their money, which is really terrible. But that's the way it is, and it's unfortunate. And I would tell most kids, even kids that are a 10 UTR, play on your high school team as well, because it's still, even if you're a 10 UTR, the odds of being a professional are even slimmer than none. So you might as well have 8 years of playing on a team than just stuck with 4 or 3 years.
Yeah.
So I think it's a great, I think it's a great thing that you're saying, who cares about the UTR? It's more important, team, all that. And I know people are going to say, well, Jackie's already playing in college, or she's got this team thing because she works so hard. But look, we've had players that were homeschooled, traveled around, and in the last year played on their high school team because they wanted to do that, and they still went to Wake Forest and did all that stuff. So you can still do both.
Yeah.
You can still play on your high school team and be a national. She was a national champion, this one person we were talking about, the NCAAs. So.
Yeah, I know. I mean, some girls, when I was, like, growing up in juniors, like, they would do both. They would do high school, like, playing for their high school, playing USTA tournament. So it's a good mix for sure, I think.
I think they should do this.
Yeah.
This is my personal opinion. They got them all hopped up on not playing on high school. I think the UTR, if they really cared, should weight the high school matches heavier so you get an extra quarter point if you play high school matches in your win.
Yeah.
So if you won a match 1-1, say your UTR goes up a half a point. Let's say it goes up 75% if you played in a high school match. That way, all those great players will play.
Yeah.
In Florida, they all play in high school. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's just they're playing. Up here, we've gotten like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a good experience to have before going into college with a team. But
Jack,
yeah.
It's always great to see you. Hopefully you'll come this summer, give us a little visit like we were talking about, and play for a week with the Drew. We're doing, for our high-performance program, college visits. Great players like Jackie will hopefully come and play for a week, and you'll get that experience of that high-level play. Don't worry about the UTR, just the high-level play.
Yes.
It's awesome to see you. Good luck this weekend. I will try to be there. I know you're in Ithaca, but March 1st and 2nd, you're at home, so I'm going to be over
there
watching
those
matches.
Purdue, Army and Purdue. Thank you. Thank you
it's
so
awesome
much.
Awesome to see you, Jack.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Hey, everybody. Hope you like the podcast. Please share it with your friends, anybody that you know, anybody that's into tennis, anybody that's into bettering themselves. Share it.